probably to Aiden's level of high intelligence. But like Aiden, he doesn't show it. I can bet money that he knows about Aiden's true character. I suspect Xander knows too. They couldn't possibly have known Aiden for all these years and not detect that something is wrong. His brow quirks as he closes the book and lets it fall to his lap.
What if the person's lack of existentialism causes them to be a target of manipulation?
I approach him and sit beside him on the grass. Then do you believe those who manipulate have a sense of essence? He gives an easy smile.
Perhaps they suffer from an existential crisis too.
In that case, and according to the theory, people who manipulate can be manipulated. It's an endless circle.
It is.
He shakes the book in front of me.
You read this, yes?
I nod. But I don't mention the main character, Antoine, bored me with his existential crisis. He seemed very psychologically unwell and needed some psychotherapy. It doesn't help that I was never a fan of Jean-Paul Sartre's theory.
Have you ever thought why Antoine Roquentin kept questioning his existence?
Cole asks. Because he's an existentialism freak and a self-insertion from Sartre? He chuckles. The sound easy.
That's one way to look at it. But maybe you should read it again and search for some hidden clues.
Before I can say anything, he drops the book in my lap.
Aiden gave it to me, so keep it in good shape.
Aiden gave it to him. I never thought he'd be interested in philosophy, let alone existentialist theories. Cole and I spend the next 15 minutes discussing Sartre's work and some of his philosopher contemporaries. It's a heated conversation, since Cole and I disagree on almost everything, but it manages to keep my head off what's happening at the pitch. We switch to music, and I laugh when Cole says that he likes Coldplay. At least we agree on that.
At least your taste in music is better than your taste in philosophy.
Hey! I bump my shoulder against his. Smiling, he hops to his feet and offers me his hand.
Come on, it's time for me to practice like a dumb athlete.
You hold a grudge, don't you? I take his hand.
Me? Never.
Try again, Captain. He chuckles and so do I. The sound drifts in the secluded area around us. If I knew Cole would be such a good sport, I would have befriended him earlier. Or not. Cole belongs to Aiden's small circle, and I never looked twice at them before.
Am I interrupting something?
Aiden stands near the brick wall I was leaning against earlier, arms crossed over his chest. My heart skips a beat, no matter how much I hate it. But that's the thing about hearts, isn't it? They can't help beating despite the pain. I look around him, expecting to find Silver hanging off his arm like some puppet. She's not here. Aiden's eyes narrow on where I'm clutching Cole's hand. If looks could kill, we would be on fire now. I should let Cole go and ignore Aiden, but screw him. He had the bitch queen hang off his arm all day. What right does he have to glare at me as if I'm doing the wrong thing? Yes, you are, actually, I say in a light tone. Cole and I were having a good time until you showed up. Cole raises an eyebrow, but he doesn't say anything. In fact, his lips quirk in amusement.
Let her go, Nash.
Aiden grinds out, his breathing turning harsher. I grip Cole's hand tighter. He doesn't attempt to leave either way.
Elsa.
Aiden's voice drifts in clear menace.
Let go of that hand, or...
Oh, what? What will you do now? Make me watch while you fuck Silver? Shut up, damn you. I'm giving him ideas. Before I can reply, I lift my chin in false bravado. I can do the same if you're into voyeurism. Aiden is in my face in a split second. I flinch back as my heartbeat picks up speed. Aiden looms over me like doom and glares down at me with flaring nostrils that might as well breathe fire. In my stupefaction, I don't even realize that Cole has slipped his hand from mine.
Don't be late for practice, King. You need to make up for your mess last game.
Cole offers me a warm smile and disappears around the corner. Aiden advances into me. I try to keep my ground, but it's impossible with all the demons swirling in his eyes. I gulp past the lump in my throat. With every step he takes forward, I step back. My shoulder blades hit the tree and I wince. Aiden leans his forearm on the tree above my head, caging me in.
Are you done playing, sweetheart?
Chapter 34. Done playing? Is this all that is to him? Are my heart and my body a bloody game? The fury from earlier sweeps over me. My posture stiffens, but I keep my tone level when I speak. Actually, no, Aiden. I'm not done playing. I think I'll take Xander up on his offer and become his girlfriend. For real this time. Then there's Cole. I didn't realize he's so interesting and smart. Even Ronan is so charming. Choices, choices.
Are you done?
Aiden draws tight, but he manages to control whatever temper is trying to blaze through. I'm not done. You don't believe me, do you? Do you think I'm bluffing? I'll prove it to you. He grips my arm with brute force.
You're not going anywhere.
Watch me. I push at his stupid broad shoulders. I should know better than to use physical strength against him, but at this moment, I'm so worked up I can't think straight. He keeps me pinned to the tree with an effortless hand around my arm. Let me the fuck go! I pant with frustration.
Never.
He says the word with so much conviction, so much authority. I stop and stare at him with what must look like an are-you-shitting-me expression. You already moved on, so let me do the same. My voice breaks and I clear my throat. What the hell do you want from me anymore? I resist the pressure building behind my eyes. I'm not going to cry.
Do you honestly believe it's even possible to move on from you, sweetheart?
The strange mixture of tenderness and anger causes my heart to jump. Everyone at school saw you move on with Silver just fine.
I don't care about everyone at school. The show was only meant for you.
For me? The bite of anger returns again. Did I miss some memo that you should be parading with another girl after we had sex for the first time? Not to mention that you abandoned me after said sex? Aiden's lips quirk in a victorious smile.
There. That's the reaction I've been hoping for.
What? I snap.
You wanted this.
I wanted this. Your manipulation game is strong, but it's not strong enough to make me believe I wanted you on another girl's arms.
You wanted to have a choice, a real one.
The gray of his eyes hardens to gunmetal.
So I gave you a chance to choose me. Your reply is 3 days late, but I'll take it.
My lips move to say something, but nothing comes out. I'm speechless. After a few seconds, or minutes, of staring at his wrongfully beautiful face, I say, your way of giving me a choice is thrusting Silver in my face.
An encouragement.
I laugh without humor. As usual, he always makes the choices swing in his direction. Why Silver? Why not any other girl?
She threatens you.
What?
It's subconscious, but I noticed that she's the only one you glare at, even when she doesn't get in your way.
Wow. I'm really speechless. You never play fair, do you?
Oh, but I did. I gave you the choice that you were itching for. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have left your side.
The heavy weight that's been perching on my chest since Saturday eases like a silent wave. I'm still angry as hell at him, but he was giving me what I wanted, even if his method sucks.
If you sent me a text or called me over the weekend, I wouldn't have resorted to this method.
Aiden continues, not appearing the least bit apologetic, If anything, his left eye twitches as if he's pissed off.
You know patience was never my thing.
What would you have done next with Silver? Date her? Kiss her? Fuck her? Maybe in the opposite order.
Silver means fuck to me, and she knows it.
He lets go of my arm to palm both my cheeks.
You're the one who keeps me up all night.
Screw you, Aiden. My words are muffled when his lips brush against mine. A lump clogs my throat, and a moan fights to escape. I fight back tears, but this time it's for an entirely different reason. It's like my heart has resurrected after being stabbed to death. It's scary how Aiden controls my mood. I lost my body and my better judgment to him. And now my happiness seems to be controlled by him, too. If you go near Silver again, it's over, Aiden. I whisper near his mouth. That earns me a glare. Aiden dislikes being threatened, but I need to draw the line there. It's not really about jealousy or possessiveness, although part of it is true. But mostly, it's about my self-worth. As much as I hate to admit it, Silver threatens me, and I'll never allow him to make me feel like I did this morning.
Don't say the word over when we didn't even start.
Then don't go near Silver. I mean it, Aiden. I'll never forgive cheating.
I like your possessiveness, sweetheart.
He places a teasing kiss on the corner of my mouth.
But will you be able to get over me?
I'd rather break my heart in pieces and step on the remains than be with you. He pulls back enough to study my face with an indecipherable expression.
Noted.
I want to trust you. I really do. But until then, I can't be in a relationship with you. He narrows his eyes, but quickly lets it go.
I'll prove that you can trust me.
You can trust me, too. I'll never cheat on you. His expression darkens, as if the mere word offends him.
I know you won't.
What will you do if I somehow cheat? I'm treading into a dangerous territory, but curiosity gets the better of me.
Kill the bastard.
No hesitation. How about me? He cups my jaw with false tenderness.
That's the difference between you and me, sweetheart. You'd leave me in a heartbeat if I cheat, but I'll never leave you, even if you cheat.
It's a hypothetical situation, but it strikes a chord within me. I feel an overwhelming need to kiss him, devour him, just pluck him away and hide him from the world where I'm the only one who can look at him, touch him, and talk to him. I won't be sharing his smiles with Silver or anyone else. He seals his lips against mine, biting my bottom lip into his mouth and pulls away too fast.
Now say it.
Say what? I pant.
Say that you choose me.
Isn't it obvious?
Say the words, Elsa.
My arms wrap around his neck and I graze the hairs at the back of his neck. It's crazy, but I choose you, Aiden. His mouth claims mine as his fingers grab a handful of my hair, releasing it from the band. His hand snakes under my ass, and I lift myself, wrapping my legs around his lithe waist. I'm lost in the moment. In him. Everything seems to be moving way too fast in a direction I don't recognize. But I'm done pretending he means nothing. I'm done fighting against myself and the pull he has on me. My fingers thread into his hair as I open up to him. His other hand grips my hip, pulling me against his hard muscles. My breasts crush into his chest, and suddenly, I hate our clothes. I hate my tracksuit and his jersey. I hate that my skin can't be glued to his. The need to engrave myself in him hits me again. It's a strange, sporadic urge that overwhelms me and refuses to let go. I rub my stomach against his growing erection. The sense of time and space escapes me in a heartbeat. In a moment, I picture us in a room. There's no one but the two of us in that room, It's quiet, except for our harsh breathing. Footsteps pound beyond the room's door. I continue kissing Aiden, not wanting to break the spell. Something nags at the back of my mind. My limbs start to tremble, and my shoulder blades stiffen with black, deep fear. "He's coming," I whisper against Aiden's mouth. The school's backyard comes back into focus, and Xander's blonde hair peeks from behind the corner.
"Coach is after your ass, King."
Aiden's dark attention stays on me. It's like he knows that I didn't mean Xander or anyone here when I said, "He's coming." Chapter 35. During practice, Aiden throws me grins every chance he gets. My cheeks flame at the attention he draws towards me. Even the girls on the track team, who rarely talk to me, nudge me a few times. They were never mean to me, but they never bothered with me before either. Once practice is over, I linger back and glance one last look at the football pitch. I don't need to search for Aiden since he's running in my direction. He has such breathtaking athletic ease when he runs. His form is taut, graceful, and full of so much confidence. He reaches me in a few seconds, his jet black hair sticking to his forehead with sweat and his breathing controlled. Almost everyone in my immediate surrounding grows silent, as if they're watching the show. I fidget, feeling uncomfortable with all the attention. It's different from bullying, but it's attention all the same. Being under the spotlight causes my skin to prickle. But since I've gotten involved with Aiden, I should have known that he comes with attention plastered all over him. I clear my throat. "Nice game." He tilts his head to the side.
"If you replied 2 days ago, I would have had an actual nice official game and wouldn't have Coach breathing down my neck."
"Okay." He's still salty about that. His fingers brush a strand of my hair back. My skin tingles and I want to lean into his hand so bad, but the audience stops me.
"Meet me in the car park,"
he says. "Why?" He pinches my cheek.
"Stop with the questions and meet me there."
I nod.
"King!"
Coach Larson calls from behind Aiden.
"Locker room meeting now! Yes, coach!"
Aiden calls back, but he never takes his eyes off me. The pull between us is crazy and addictive. Despite the audience surrounding us, I'm lost in his smoky eyes. It's like he's able to erase the world just like I can. He's a compelling type of madness. Ronan clasps Aiden's shoulders from behind, shattering the moment.
"Yo, King, let's go to the meeting or coach will make us do push-ups."
Aiden throws him a glare.
"Push-ups are better than the grave I've been digging for you." "I'm hurt. You better pay for the psychological damage."
Ronan's eyes flick in my direction.
"Tame the beast, Ellie."
I smile. I don't think I can.
"Sure you can."
Ronan waggles his eyebrows. Aiden elbows him and he howls in pain.
"Our friendship just gained an expiration date, King. The only way to save it is by letting me drive your car. Friendship over."
I burst into laughter as Ronan's eyes widen comically.
"How about just an hour?" "Over, Asta." "Okay, a loop?"
He nods at me and clasps his arms around Aiden's shoulder, guiding him away.
"Outside,"
Aiden mouths to me as Ronan drags him, spouting a monologue about friendship before whore cars. I'm still smiling when I feel someone watching me. Or glaring at me. I turn sideways, but the track team girls seem to have dreamy eyes more than anything. After searching my surroundings, I spot Adam. He leans against the railing leading to the football team's locker room, staring at me. Silver stands beside him. While Adam's gaze is unreadable, hers is full of contempt.
"Never mind, Silver."
Tara, a member of the track team, interlaces her arm with mine.
She's just bitter that King will never look at her the way he looks at you.
Tara and I walk into the locker room. Like Kim, Tara has been an elite since she was a child. I think her father is a knight, too. I often forget about her aristocratic title, because Tara is the modest type.
Silva wishes she was you,
Tara continues. What do you mean?
She's been gunning after King since Royal Elite Junior, but he never really showed interest in her. Then you come along, and he openly shows you off. She feels threatened.
She's been gunning after him how?
So much for swearing to never get into this drama.
In a territorial kind of way? Tara taps her lower lip, seeming deep in thought.
It's weird, you know? I don't think she's even attracted to him, but she's been working to score him anyway.
The rumor is that she has a secret boyfriend, but is using King as a cover-up.
Maybe she's dating a thug.
Or maybe she's dating Aiden, or sleeping with him, and the whole secret boyfriend deal is a deflation method.
Nope. Not going there.
I promised to try trusting Aiden not 2 hours ago.
Tara keeps talking about the multiple rumors that circled around the school since Royal Elite Junior until now.
I never had so much contact with Tara, because we both keep to ourselves. I never thought she's so much into gossip. Apparently I've been missing out on half of what's happening at Rez, like the fact that Mr. James, the previous rugby coach, was fired for a complaint of harassment against one of his players. I thought he was transferred willingly. Tara doesn't know the player, because the school's board made sure to keep everything under wraps. There's also the fact that King, the father, not the son, will be personally overlooking the football team's schedule. Tara says that he has friends in big teams of the Premier League and will be sending scouts over. I wonder if Aiden will pursue football professionally, like his cousin.
We're in the shower, with only a thin, blurry glass wall separating us, when Tara blurts, "Can I ask you something?"
"Sure." I apply the shampoo over my head and massage my skull.
"Don't take this the wrong way, Elsa. I hear a lot of rumors, and I just want to know which is true and which is false."
I laugh.
"No, I'm not really frozen, if that's what you're asking."
"You kind of are, though."
"What do you mean?"
"You don't even know 90% of the stuff that happens at Rez. You don't care about anyone other than Kim. Everyone thinks you're
stuck up."
"I was going to say a recluse."
There's an awkward smile in her voice.
"It's okay. I don't mind what everyone thinks. I'm only here because it's the perfect way to get to Cambridge."
I want to tell her that being selected as a target on the first day at school didn't really warm me up to the students here. But I keep that to myself.
"That makes sense."
She sounds thoughtful again.
"Then the rumor about you and King can't be true, I guess."
"What rumor?"
Once I'm done rinsing my hair, I towel it and wrap another towel around my torso. Tara and I get out of our stalls at the same time. Her wet chestnut hair falls to a sleek bob around her round face as she ties the towel around her body. The other girls are at the back, talking about their plans for the rest of the afternoon. Tara approaches me and whispers,
"Some say that you and King are old acquaintances, and you hurt him. That's why he hated you the moment he first saw you at Rez."
My heart jolts and picks up speed. The rumor makes perfect sense. If I weren't 1,000% sure that I met him that day for the first time, I would have believed it too.
"I didn't know anyone in Rez the day I came here," I tell her.
"I thought so too. That means the second rumor is more correct."
"And that is?"
She lifts a shoulder.
"He only targeted you because you were the new girl."
"I'm sure that's the right version."
After more gossip from Tara while we change our clothes, we part ways near the teacher's office. She has to talk to the swim team's coach about her younger brother's application, who's a sophomore. I visibly shudder when I pass by the pool area. Deep water stiffens my shoulder blades with fear.
especially if it's dark, and I can't make out my own limbs. After a few panic attacks when I was younger, Uncle and Aunt quit taking me to the beach altogether. They always eliminated anything of discomfort from my immediate vicinity. I'm beyond thankful for the lengths they've been going through to make sure I live a comfortable life. Speaking of which, while I walk to the car park, I retrieve my phone and open our chat room. I shoot them a message that I'm not heading straight home. Aunt's reply is immediate. Aunt B. Where to? Elsa. Out with Kim. I bite my lower lip. After the tension this morning, I would rather lie to her about Aiden. At least until I figure out where we stand. Uncle J.
Have fun, pumpkin.
Aunt B. Promise you won't eat any junk food. Elsa. Promise. I shoot a message to Kim that I'm catching a ride with Aiden. Kim. Ah, with King? Weren't you guys fighting this morning? Isn't the bitch queen his date for the day? Elsa. Long story. Kim. FaceTime later. I need details. Elsa. Kay. Kim. And this better not be a ripoff from a Korean drama where the BFF is always in the dark. I send her a laughing emoji and promise to talk to her later. Once I'm outside, the humid air cools the skin of my face. I spot Aiden waiting by his car. His uniform is disheveled at best, like he wore it in a hurry and he's fussing with his shoelace. That strange awareness starts a war, slashing and clawing at my abdomen as I walk towards him. My steps are fast and silent, as if I'm floating through the air. This pool is terrifying. He's terrifying. Still, there's no fighting how much I want him close. Now I know how moth feel when they fly to flames. The flames are worth the burn. I stumble to a halt a small distance away and stifle a gasp with the back of my hands. As he ties his shoelace, his uniform's trousers ride up, revealing his skin. A deep circular scar surrounds his right ankle. It seems as old and as faded as the scars on his back and the underside of his forearm. What on earth happened to him? Something light hits my shoulder. I jump with a small yelp. Cole comes into view.
Sorry, I didn't mean to startle you.
No, I'm fine. I look around him to Aiden, who's already straightened up and is heading in our direction. Cole opens the outer pocket of my backpack and slips Jean-Pierre Sartre's Nusi.
You forgot this.
I smile. Didn't anyone tell you that you shouldn't open a girl's bag? His lips twitch.
I'll remember that next time. There'll be no next time.
Aiden stands beside me, surrounds my waist with a strong hand and pulls me into the curve of his body.
That depends on how you act from now on, King.
Cole sounds half-teasing, half-serious, before he gives me a knowing look. I agree with that, I say.
Tell me, Nash, do you want your grave next to Knight's or Astor's?
Aiden's face is dead serious as he speaks.
I prefer to not have a grave yet.
Cole smiles at me.
Then stop threatening what's mine. I will when you do.
My gaze bounces between Aiden and Cole. Unlike the war of gazes he's had with Xander the other time, Cole appears completely nonchalant. However, I can sense the tension in the air. It's like a cool sheen over my skin, threatening to explode any second. This is odd. Aiden and Cole don't strike me as the fighting type. They have the most laid-back relationship in the group. Movement catches my attention. Silver stomps in our direction, her cheeks red and nostrils flaring. I sigh. She'll ruin my mood if I face her.
Take care of her.
Aiden tells Cole in a calm tone, as if they've dealt with this before.
On it.
Cole's cool expression disappears. His features tighten as he goes to intercept Silver. I don't get to watch what's happening since Aiden guides me to the passenger seat of his car. I don't hear Silver and Cole, but I see her screaming at him. She doesn't spare Aiden a glance. Instead, she cuts me a glare before she starts pushing at Cole's chest. He keeps her at arm's length, his expression still as tight as earlier. Silver continues struggling against him. Cole leans in and says something in her ear. Just like that, Silver goes limp against him, eyes widened. He takes the chance to drag her out of the car park. Or maybe he's taking her to his or her car. I can't tell for sure, since they're out of my field of vision. What was that all about? I ask Aiden once he's seated in the driver's seat.
Nothing important.
Do you always have Cole take care of your girl problems? He gives me an are-you-serious look.
No one can make Nash do anything he doesn't want to do.
Not even you.
Not even me.
He pauses.
Besides, Silver is his stepsister. He knows how to deal with her best.
His what?
His mother and her father are getting married.
Whoa. I must really be out of it when it comes to school news. I knew Silver's parents were divorced, but I didn't know she was going to be Cole's stepsister. They have completely different personalities. I wonder how that will go. The engine revs to life, and I clench my thighs at the vibrations. It's such a strange, thrilling sensation. Aiden's lips pull in a mischievous grin.
You like that, don't you?
I don't.
Sure thing, sweetheart.
He says with a mocking edge. Dickhead. As we weave out of the car park, Aiden threads his fingers through mine and places our intertwined hands on his hard thigh. My breathing cracks at the amount of tenderness in his touch. It's almost normal. His side profile oozes so much masculine beauty. Tingles start between my legs, and the engine's vibrations don't help. Where are we going? I ask, to distract myself from ogling him.
You'll see.
I narrow my eyes. Where to, Aiden?
Not to a slaughterhouse. I won't go all serial killer on you.
I can't help but laugh. He winks, squeezing my fingers in his.
By the way,
he glances at me.
Why don't you come to Elite's games?
I don't go to school games. He raises an eyebrow.
You only go to Premier League games, Miss Snob.
No, it's... I want to say I don't like Elites, but that would be a lie. I hated them before, but now I have no reason to.
If you come to a game, I'll take you somewhere special.
Where?
You'll have to agree first.
Why do you even want me to come? Your Instagram stalkers aren't enough? His grin widens.
If you know about them, then you must have been stalking me, too.
My cheeks heat. That's not true.
You're one of those silent stalkers, aren't you?
He continues in a contemplative tone.
You stalk all the time without liking or commenting as if you're a ghost.
You're so full of yourself.
Silent stalkers are the scariest.
He throws me an amusement gleam.
Do you fantasize about me, sweetheart?
Yes, but screw him. Are you going to tell me where we're going? I sulk.
A place you'll love.
Chapter 36. Turns out the place I'll love is Arsenal. No shit. Freaking Arsenal. And I'm not talking about watching practice like the rest of the fans. As soon as the players headed inside, Aiden guided me to the locker room. I stood there like a gaping idiot as I stared at my favorite players. Alexandre Lacazette, Maitland Niles, Monreal, Levi King, freaking Ozil. Then I got out of my stupor and asked to take selfies with as many of them as possible, including Coach Emery. I stare in a stupor at the picture while Aiden and I sit for an early dinner. We're in the same coffee shop restaurant as the other time. There's some indistinct chatter coming from downstairs. It's quiet at the top level. Only the older gentleman from the other time sits near the window, reading a book and sipping from his coffee. My fingers flick over my phone.
I can't believe I smiled like a normal human being and didn't actually lick the guys. Uziel even had an arm over my shoulder. Uncle will be so jealous when I show him these. I absentmindedly sip from my orange juice. I'm so going to gloat about meeting my idols.
Are you done?
Aiden doesn't sound amused. He's been in a pissy mood since he practically dragged me out of the locker room. I peel my gaze from the phone to him. He removed his res jacket, remaining in the white t-shirt with his cuffs rolled to his elbows. The view of his strong forearms and the tattoos gets me every time. He's stuffing French fries in his mouth and glaring at my phone. He doesn't seem impressed with my enthusiasm, but I smile at him anyway. Meeting Arsenal's players is such a geeky moment in my life. I didn't even think it was possible unless I hoard in front of the stadium for years and hope to catch a picture. However, with the right connections and the King last name, anything can be possible. Aiden said Arsenal's president is a family friend. Of course he is. Otherwise, Aiden wouldn't have been able to waltz me right into the team's locker room. Thanks for taking me there, I say. It made my day. No, my year. He grunts in response and continues shoving French fries down his throat.
Stop staring at your phone and eat. You haven't touched your food.
Okay, you sound just like Aunt. I place my phone on the table and dive into my salad. What are you so upset about?
Are you acting like you don't know?
Not really. You seem to have your knickers in a twist since the locker room.
Don't idolize other men in front of me. I don't like it.
A burst of laughter slips from my throat. Are you jealous, mighty king?
Damn straight I'm jealous. I'm so possessive of you, it drives me fucking crazy.
I bite back a grin and try to stuff it with a forkful of salad. Is it so wrong that I love driving him crazy? I'm getting high on this feeling, and like any junkie, I want more. Is that why you punched Xander and threatened Cole? He pauses eating, eyes squinting the slightest bit before he flashes me the devil's threatening smile.
Do you think it's fun to antagonize me?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that why you pulled that show with Nash earlier?
Cole and I were discussing philosophical theories.
Like?
My head tilts. Cole said that Sartre's book, Nausea, belongs to Aiden. I still don't think he's the type who'd be interested in philosophy. Existentialism, I say. Ever heard of it?
Boring and illogical. Next.
I play with my fork on the plate. If he thinks it's boring and illogical, he wouldn't have kept a copy of Nausea. I sure as hell returned mine to the library as soon as I finished with it. Have you ever read any book by Jean-Paul Sartre? I prompt.
A few.
He's quiet for a long time that I think he's done talking.
My mother had a thing for French philosophers.
What happened to her? The question hovers at the tip of my tongue, but I doubt that he'll answer it. And I don't want to sound pushy, so I ask, what else did she like?
Me.
He smiles, seeming lost in his own thoughts.
I think I'm the only person she liked.
How about your father?
Maybe at some point, but I never witnessed it. She disassociated from Jonathan as much as he disassociated from her. His work came first. His brother, Leave, and I came second. She was always last.
My heart aches at an image of a young Aiden and his mum being ignored by his father for work. But at that time, he at least had his mother. Maybe his transformation started after he lost her. Which means that I'm right to assume Alicia King's death played a significant role in shaping his deviant personality. I understand what it means to have workaholic parents, I say sympathetically.
Your real parents were workaholics?
I don't know. A slash of pain grips me whenever they're mentioned. Maybe this is also how Aiden feels when he talks about his mother.
What do you mean you don't know?
I told you. I don't remember my life prior to the fire.
The only parents I remember are Aunt Blair and Uncle Jackson. A contemplative look looms over his features. It disappears so fast that I wouldn't have noticed it if I weren't watching him so intently.
I see.
It sucks to have workaholic parents. He lifts a shoulder.
Not really. Jonathan can be a workaholic all he likes. I'm leaving for college anyway.
I chew on the salad before speaking. Are you going to pursue football professionally? He laughs, and it's the sexiest sound I've ever heard.
You truly think Jonathan King will allow his only son to be a football player?
But he let your cousin?
On the condition that he simultaneously studies at a university.
Oh.
I like football, but it was never my endgame. It's a short career and is insignificant in the great scheme of things. Jonathan and I agree on that.
I go back to picking at my food. Then what are your plans for college?
Oxford.
He appears bored. My fork stills against the plate. Invisible hands grip my chest. Why does knowing that we'll be on different sides of the country hurt so much? I force a smile. Wow. You really need to work hard for that.
Why do you think I stay in the top 5%?
He winks. Sometimes I forget that he's one of the top students in Res. Does your father throw a word with the teachers?
My father doesn't need to throw any word. They do it on their own.
He sips from his cola.
I don't need the push, though. I can get the grades.
Really? I sound as suspicious as I feel. I don't see you study even during the finals. He chuckles, eyes glinting with mischief.
You are stalking me.
I'm just saying that those in the top 10% care more about their grades than you do.
That's because you guys work hard instead of working smart. What will slaving for grades give you?
I don't know. I mock. Good universities?
And then what? Elite jobs? An expensive house in an upper-class neighborhood? German cars? Wife? Kids? The whole cliché? What after?
He seems bored with the whole list. But then again, why wouldn't he? Since his birth, he already knows he'll have it all, without making any effort. He was destined to be King Enterprise's heir. Someone else might have felt the pressure, but Aiden is the opposite. He lives for challenges, so the whole mapped-out future must look so dull in his eyes. If it were up to you, what would you have done? I ask. He lifts his head abruptly, as if he's been taken by surprise, then grins.
Kidnap you into my cave.
I'm serious. I hit his leg underneath the table and take a sip of water to soothe my dry throat.
I'm also serious. You're the only thing that breaks the endless, vicious cycle.
I choke on the water and it splatters all around the table and my jacket. Aiden laughs and offers me a napkin.
Jesus.
Instead of giving me the napkin, he reaches over and wipes my cheeks and around my mouth while I stare at him. Somewhere in between, the napkin slips away and he grazes my cheeks with his fingers. Then he dips them down to the bottom lip, tracing them with the tip of his fingers as his smoldering gaze devours my mouth. Each stroke is like a lightning bolt to my aching core. My thighs clench in a futile attempt to chase away the throb. Aiden.
Sweetheart.
His attention never leaves my lips. We're in public. My whisper is barely audible over the erratic beat of my heart.
I'm not even kissing you,
he says, in a slightly husky tone.
I'm only wiping away the water ever so innocently.
Yeah, right. I try to control my breathing and fail. Nothing about you is innocent.
But there's so much innocence about you, sweetheart.
He leans in to whisper in hot, sultry words.
And I'm tempted to tarnish it.
That should scare me. And maybe it would have a few weeks ago. But now, I can only feel myself falling harder and faster than anyone should. My nipples tighten. And I'm so glad that the uniform's jacket is thick enough to conceal my reaction to him and his words. Something flashes in my peripheral vision. My head snaps to the window. But there's no one there except for the man who's still reading from his book and sipping his coffee.
What is it?
Aiden puts two fingers under my chin and turns me back to face him. I swear someone was watching us just now.
I would have seen them. No one is out there.
I must be imagining things. I stand up, still trying to fight the throb between my thighs. I'm going to the washroom. I leave before Aiden makes me sit on his lap for something crazier. In the empty washroom, I remove my jacket and put it under the hand dryer. I'm not even a minute in when the door to the washroom clicks open. I feel him before I see him. Or maybe it's because of his distinctive clean scent, mixed with his unique body odor. The hand dryer sound cuts off when I remove my jacket and face Aiden. He leans against the closed door and reaches behind his back to lock it. The pitch-black look in his eyes starts a riot at the bottom of my stomach. What are you doing? I whisper, as if someone can hear us. He abandons the door and strides towards me with sure, wide steps. My heart flutters, and my nails dig into the jacket. This is the ladies... My words die in my throat when his lips crush to mine in an all-consuming kiss. It's hard and angsty and so passionate. The jacket slips from my hands and falls to the counter. My back hits the wall with a thud. It's painful and delicious at the same time. Aiden places both hands under my ass and lifts me against the wall. My legs wrap around his waist, and my soft curves clash against his hard muscles, like it always belonged there. Like it's a blasphemy that we didn't do this before. Aiden, I try to argue, but he wraps a hand around my throat and kisses me savagely, nipping at my bottom lip and killing any protest I have. Screw public places. Screw everything.
You don't idolize other men in front of me and expect me to do nothing about it.
He grunts, biting my lip.
You're lucky I didn't fuck you in front of them.
His tongue thrusts inside and I let him. My fingers thread into his hair and I let him consume me. Own me. Ruin me. I don't care anymore as long as he makes me feel this consuming passion.
You're fucking everything up,
he says roughly, before claiming my lips again while yanking my skirt up to my waist. I try to help with his belt, but it's awkward with this position. To my defense, I never had sex against the wall in a public washroom. Aiden lets go of my throat. He yanks down both his trousers and his boxers with one hand and shoves my underwear down with the other. I grind against his erection, chasing the throb between my shaking thighs. I wrap my arms around his neck, my movements turning frantic and uncoordinated. Fuck me, Aiden. His face morphs in surprise before he curses. His features tighten with furious lust and something else I can't figure out.
Fuck, Elsa!
He slams inside me in one agonizing go. I shriek, but he swallows the sound with his mouth against mine. The harsh, unyielding strokes of his tongue match the maddening rhythms of his thrusts. My limbs go into a puddle, and my heart almost leaps out of my chest. The threat of someone walking in on us doesn't water down my wild need for him. If anything, it makes it even more animalistic and out of control. I don't last long. I can't. When he wraps a hand around my throat and squeezes, I come hard. I bite Aiden's shoulder to muffle the hoarse scream. Aiden grunts against my neck, sucking on the skin as he spills inside me. We're locked around each other against the washroom's wall. Our breaths come in and out in a frenzy, and the air mingles with the scent of us. I can't believe I just had sex in a public place. I smile. A genuine, happy smile. I never felt so alive. Chapter 37. Weeks pass, and with each passing day, I wander deeper into Aiden's maze. It's not bad. It's just surreal. Everyone has demons. Aiden's are just darker and meaner. It takes a lot to get used to his mindfuckery and manipulative streak. It takes a lot to see past the facade and into his true image. For one, Aiden is the jealous type. When we sit for lunch, his teammates try to keep all contact to a minimum, all except for the three horsemen, especially Xander. I swear he doesn't have any sense of self-preservation. The three of them are actually fun to hang out with. They're the only people around Aiden who aren't scared of him and who don't bow down to his royal decrees like the rest of us. Aiden carries my books as we get out of the library. A few students stop and murmur about us in the hallway, but I'm starting to get used to the attention. His phone vibrates, and since he has his hands filled with books, I sigh and retrieve it from his back pocket for him. I can carry my own books, you know. He arches a teasing eyebrow.
If you do, you won't touch me inappropriately at school like now.
Stop it. I remove my hand from his trousers with heated cheeks. It's a jab at me, because last week, after practice, I snuck with him to a dark corner near the locker rooms. At that time, I only meant to kiss him. That kiss ended up with me against the wall and him pounding inside me and muffling my screams with a hand to my mouth. My body tingles in remembrance. There's something about having sex with him. It's never enough. His lips quirk in that infuriating smile.
What? You're thinking about it?
I shake my head and my eyes fall on the screen of his phone. What the? It's locked, but since it's a text, I'm able to see it. Jackson.
Thanks for the tickets, son. Go Gunners.
It can be a different Jackson, who also loves Arsenal and is thanking Aiden for the tickets, but it's very unlikely. I stop at the corner of the hallway and thrust the phone in Aiden's face. Since when are you communicating with Uncle behind my back?
You make it sound like some sort of conspiracy.
Are you telling me it isn't?
It isn't. He loves Arsenal and I have backstage tickets.
I narrow my eyes. Stop trying to take my family away.
I'm only being a good sport so he'd approve of me.
Uncle approves of him, all right. While Aunt is still skeptical and continues reminding me that my studies come first, Uncle is all over Aiden whenever he drives me home. He even invites him for dinners and breakfast with us. And since Aiden is opportunistic, he jumps all over any invitation he gets. If I'm not lying to myself, I'd admit that having him in my space is fun. Kim says he's making an effort for me, and maybe she's right. I'm just scared that if I let go completely, he'll swallow me whole. That's why I haven't attempted to make what we have official. We're exclusive, but we're not really dating, in the conventional term. You're incurable, I huff. Still holding the books, Aiden backs me up so my shoulder blades hit the wall. He lowers his head until his warm breath draws shivers on my skin. His voice is low and raspy when he says,
There's nothing I wouldn't do to have you, sweetheart.
Nothing?
Absolutely nothing.
The thought should be scary, but I'm feeling anything but scared right now. I tiptoe and plant a chaste kiss on his cheek. Before he can deepen it, I duck and escape. There's no way I'd let him kiss me in the school's hallways. I'm giggling as I run down the hall. My head collides against a torso. I fall on my ass and pain explodes in my hip bone. Ow. Adam looks down at me with a glare.
Watch where you're going.
He throws one last malicious stare before he stalks off. I stand up and dust off my skirt just in time for Aiden to catch up with me. One look at me, and his playful expression disappears.
What's wrong?
Nothing. If Aiden knows, he'll do something unpredictable. And I really don't want any trouble now. Not when both of us need a clean record to get into Cambridge and Oxford.
By the way,
he says,
you still haven't come to one of my games.
He keeps reminding me of that fact. It's silly, really, but I want to keep some things from him. Like not going to his games. Not following him back on Instagram. Although I stalk it all the time. I feel like those little things will keep me independent. I check my watch. I have an appointment with my doctor. He narrows his eyes.
I'll pick you up after practice.
I suppress a nervous smile and nod. Today, we're watching the Champions League game in his house with the guys. Kim agreed to join us, and I hugged her until she called me a creep. It's the first time I'm going to Aiden's house. He's always eating at my house, sneaking into my room, and spending nights in my bed when aunt and uncle are caught up in work. What's so hard about going to his palace-like house and meeting his father, the mighty Jonathan King? Nothing, right? Chapter 38. Being back in Dr. Khan's office after more than a year of interrupting my therapy is weird, to say the least. The office is white, without anything distinctive other than the wall-length library opposite us. The lack of paintings or objects is on purpose to not distract patients, and to keep their minds as open as the white walls. Or at least that's what Dr. Khan told me when I asked him a while back. He's sitting on the brown leather chair, with a notepad in his hand, while I lie down on the recliner chair. Dr. Imran Khan, who I learnt is the same name of a Bollywood actor, is a small-built man in his mid-50s. His salt-and-pepper hair is more salt than pepper now, compared to when I first met him 10 years ago. His skin is tanned, but is considered light, compared to others with Pakistani heritage.
I'm happy you decided to return, Elsa.
His tone is welcoming, and he looks genuinely happy to have me back on his recliner chair.
Mr. Quinn mentioned trouble with stress for exams.
His kind but piercing brown eyes focus on me.
What do you think is the cause of that stress?
It's senior year, and the pressure is real. It's not a lie, but it's not the reason I'm here, either. Dr. Khan bites it. His eyes fill with what I call detached care. I think that's what makes him perfect at his job. He has the ability to empathize, but not let his patients' feelings rub off on him. He jots down a note. Another thing about Dr. Khan is his traditional methods. He doesn't use recordings much.
Has there been anything triggering lately?
He asks. Yes. I shift against the leather, and it squeaks in the deafening silence of the room. I've been having nightmares about you hypnotizing me, Dr. Khan. His pen pauses on the notepad, and his shoulders tense. That's all the answer I need. It hasn't been a play of my imagination. Dr. Khan recovers fast.
Why do you think you had such a nightmare, Elsa?
I sit up, the leather squeaking, and face him. It's not a nightmare. It's the truth. He opens his mouth to say something, but I hold up a hand. I'm not blaming you, Dr. Khan. I know you have two theses, one in psychotherapy and the other in hypnotherapy, so it's not like you're doing anything illegal. I also know that aunt and uncle probably made you do it, but I need to know why. He shuffles his notebook as if he's about to stand up.
Perhaps we should call your guardian and...
Soho Miller. I cut him off. He's the reason why you don't practice hypnotherapy anymore. After you helped him restore his memories, he committed suicide. Dr. Khan's eyes fill with what resembles sadness, and I know I struck a chord. I did my research before coming here. I'm not Soho. I puff my chest. I'm not suicidal either. I promise to stay alive if you promise to not have aunt and uncle involved in this. They're hiding something from me, and I need to know why.
Soho also said something similar.
He sighs, and the wrinkles around his eyes ease.
He begged me to know who he was before losing his memories. When he remembered he was behind the accident that killed his wife and children, he couldn't handle the truth and took his life.
I'm not him. I can handle the truth. My tone turns pleading. I just want to know what aunt and uncle called you for. He slouches in his chair but keeps his posture uptight.
When your guardians first contacted me, you had violent episodes of screaming and falling in and out of consciousness.
I straighten. My hands turn clammy in my lap. Like my nightmares.
Your nightmares are a manifestation of your subconscious. When you were a child, your consciousness was filled with nightmares. You were traumatized and in severe shock due to the fire.
And?
And I used regression, a hypnosis method, to help resolve past traumas.
Are you saying that Aunt and Uncle asked you to erase all my memories up to the fire? A sense of betrayal fills my chest at the thought of them doing something like that behind my back. They violated my mind. So what if they're my guardians? That doesn't give them the right to erase my past.
Your aunt and uncle only called me to reduce the anxiety because they heard hypnosis helps.
He appears nostalgic.
They were desperate, especially your aunt. She looked ready to do anything to chase away your pain.
So what? Did you erase everything behind their backs?
No, Elsa.
Dr. Khan gives me a quizzical stare.
I didn't erase your memories. You did.
Chapter 39. My head won't stop spinning after I exit Dr. Khan's office. I still can't wrap my mind around the last thing he said. I only put you in a stance to resolve your traumatic experience, but when you woke up, your memories were gone. My child version's solution was to erase everything. Dr. Khan said that sometimes when things are too much, the brain can resort to skipping over the traumatic parts. Suppressing memories becomes a vital need, not an option. I was mentally and physically all over the place after the fire. I entwined my fingers together as I walked down the hallway. Did I do the right thing? How about Aunt and Uncle, then? They hid this truth from me for 10 years. I doubt they would have told me anything if I didn't put 2 and 2 together. I can't say I blame them, though. Since they swept me off from Birmingham, Aunt and Uncle did everything to protect me. To the point of overkill, sometimes. Dr. Khan said I needed to think carefully about restoring my memories. It's a one-way road. He didn't guarantee anything, but he can get me into a regression mode and help me access places in my subconscious that my consciousness isn't even aware of. When I came here, I was so sure that I wanted my memories back. However, after the story about Dr. Khan's other patient, Soho Miller, I'm not sure anymore. What if, like him, I open Pandora's box and discover things I'm not supposed to? Besides, do I really want to relive my parents' death? I shudder at the thought. My hands itch, and the urge to wash them swipes over me. With jerky fingers, I open the small pocket in my backpack and retrieve my hand sanitizer. I pour half the bottle in my palm and scrub all over until it's dried. I release a breath when the itch slowly withers away. Pocketing the hand sanitizer, I exit the building. I stumble to a halt on the pavement. Aiden's car is parked across the street, and he's standing by the driver door talking to a familiar blonde-haired Barbie doll. Silver. My nostrils flare, and a violent rush shoots through my veins. I stride across the street, trying not to break into a run. Silver isn't known to lose her cool. She's pretty much the female version of Aiden. But right now, her hands fly all around her. Aiden, on the other hand, appears bored. That should water down the fury bubbling through me, but it doesn't. The fact that he's even talking to her when he was supposed to pick me up sullies my mood. Did she come with him or something? Facing Silver is really not what I want to do after the life-changing talk I just had with Dr. Conn, but if that's what she wants, that's what she'll get.
You promised, King, she hisses.
I said I'll think about it,
he says.
You don't get to escape this. She grinds her teeth.
Escape what? I stand right at her back. She jumps up and Aiden whips his head towards me. It's like I've caught them off guard. A frown etches between his eyebrows, but there's no trace of guilt. But the